I'm Alan Combs. This is Heal Planet, and I'd like to welcome Mike Dooley, who really has a fascinating career with his Notes from the Universe and the number of followers he has in this best-selling books. And what's fascinating to me, Mike, is your career trajectory, how you were a accountant. You were a very successful one. You worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers. You had a very traditional career, and somehow the universe decided that had a different plan for you. What happened to you?
I still wonder, except, you know, to me it makes some sense. I had the mind, I guess, to want to go into business, and I thought I should get an accounting degree to do that. And then it was never with the intention of staying. It was always being an entrepreneur eventually. And then I also have a part of me that's always been just utterly fascinated with the nature of reality, beginning with who are we, how did we get here, and what can we do with our time and space. And I stuck with both, and they eventually crossed paths, being an entrepreneur and exploring my fascination with, you know, these age-old questions of our origins and purpose. And so
very
here we are today,
reading about you, even as a child, you would ask very unchildlike questions. Or should I say unchildish questions, certainly, of your parents. And a number of pieces of interesting reading matter fell into your hands over the years that kind of shaped your worldview or universe view.
Yeah, my mom was always a big reader, and I was not. But she would occasionally send me a book when I was at college with, you know, a note pasted to it, "You must read this." And she knew me well enough to know that these things would thrill me. And she'd already known that in my high school I was reading all the books on hypnosis and mind power and creative visualization, the inner game of tennis for the competitive tennis I played. And those books that she sent came at a really critical time. And there are no coincidences, I don't believe, or accidents. The critical time was me, age 18, 19, 20, really almost doubled over with anxiety regarding these questions. You know, like, why the heck are we here? And we die? Everybody dies? And they're gone forever? It's like, what is the point? And it was even more painful when the only answers that existed did not paint a pretty picture of our origins or the divine, and therefore left us with very little traction nor any ability to shape our destiny. So the books that she sent kind of confirmed my own inner suspicions, and I really believe that everyone kind of senses what the truth is. And further, I believe there is a truth. And that was so important to me back then, to kind of have this kind of anxiety coupled with solutions that confirmed my inner suspicions, that put me on a path of discovery and, for lack of a better word, success in pretty much every area of my life.
Interesting that you could have had a very successful, in fact you did, and could have continued having a very successful, if I may use the word, more traditional career life, as PricewaterhouseCoopers apparently put you in a very special section, and you were highly regarded as an international tax specialist. And how did that lead to TUT, which at first was a T-shirt company?
Oh, my gosh. Well, there was that inner sense of discontent. You know, I had saved myself from being fired in my first 6 months because I was a terrible auditor, but I got relayed over to the tax department during tax season, loaned to the tax department, and there I really flourished and took assignments overseas and was returned to New York City, then went to Boston, Massachusetts, but it was never who I was. And while the career took off, I was still left feeling kind of, this is not really who I am. And I remember thinking that my life was such at that point, and then I was maybe 28 years old, you know, I was uncommitted in relationships. Other than work, I had nothing to hold me down. So I played with the idea of selling my condominium in Boston. Somebody bought it immediately, serendipitously, and I thought, if I don't leap right now to discover who I really am, I may never have this opportunity again. And so I leapt, and it seemed like I fell very far down. But I ended up within a few months of joining my brother, a graphic designer, and then shortly after that, our mother joined us. It was the three of us, and we launched a T-shirt business because he was getting royalties for designs he had done in school, and my little insights about life, dreams, and happiness were the text that accompanied his art. And my mom was the one who believed in us when we didn't believe in ourselves, and she kind of kept us together. And in the following 10 years, we sold about $10 million worth of our own line of T-shirts, just three people.
But that came to an end, right, at some point, and then you had to once again grapple with what do you do next.
Yeah, and then the bottom kind of fell out because the trends declined and it wasn't fun anymore, and Mom was already bought out. So Andy and I said, let's liquidate, which brought about the most harrowing time of my life because, you know, once we did the liquidation, when we had a plan to liquidate, it was okay, yeah, we'll do this and it'll be okay. But then, you know, when it came to locking the last door to the last store of our small chain, at 39 years old, I was like, now what am I going to do? And I felt like I had no career momentum. I was starting over. To kind of cut to the chase, though, within a year, I was selling one of the hottest self-improvement audio programs on the World Wide Web, we called it back then.
Yeah,
and
right.
Within a year of that, I was on a self-proclaimed, but true nonetheless, world tour, including Australia, two trips to Europe, North America, Hawaii. Within a year of that, I was invited to be in The Secret, the documentary on the Law of Attraction. Mm-hmm. Within a year of that, New York Times bestseller. And my life has been a fairy tale, Alan, ever since that point in time. And looking back, the irony is I thought I had no career momentum, you know, when we liquidated the T-shirt business. I thought my life was a disaster. I thought it was the product of multiple mistakes that had compounded to bring me to a halt at 39 years old. My life seemed to be a train wreck, but in hindsight, I see no train wreck. What I realize had happened was the train of my life, metaphorically, had come to a halt, which is very rare, causing me to panic, but it came to a halt to change tracks and to blast forward faster and higher than I had ever imagined possible. It was the beginning of the largest dream I ever had coming true. Today, I still write about life, dreams, and happiness. I never lost any career momentum, but the dream coming true was it was no longer just for T-shirts being sold in souvenir markets, but it's now in these emails and books and programs and videos.
You had this time, we're talking to Mike Dooley, by the way, and you had this time in your life, though, where you talk and you write about saying, talk about scary, the months rolled by, plenty of nights you tossed in a sweat thinking, what am I going to do with my life? How did I get here? What went wrong? What if I don't make any money? What if I have to sell my home? What if I can't find? This is the kind of script so many of us have, you know, worst case scenarios. Mm. How did you get from that mindset to creating that train track you've started to go on that leads you to where you are now?
Yeah, well, Alan, I learned so much in that that rebound or realignment that is now part of my teaching, and that's one of the main things. Whenever you're going through something difficult or you've been through something difficult to the point of pain, emotional pain, extreme pain, you don't have to explain it to otherwise be able to understand and explain how to move forward from it. My fascination then was and still is the nature of reality, who we are, and what we can do with our time and space. And while I couldn't explain the seeming mess I was in, I could explain that our thoughts unfailingly become the things and events of our lives, that we're not here to be tested, judged, and sentenced, that we're pushed onto greatness every day, that we are all God particles, so to speak. And so it was focusing on what I knew was otherwise true about reality and pushing those buttons and pulling those levers. And I had a vision board. I had mantras. I was steeped in profound books around my house. I didn't read them all. I still don't like to read, unless Mom says you got to read it. But just having them around reminded me that there's a greater reality that surrounds us, that holds us together than what our physical senses show us. And then my feeling was, look, I don't know how I got here, but I know how to move forward, have a new dream, focus on the end result, not how to get there, take baby steps, take action every single day. And lo and behold, you know, we're all so inclined to succeed, given our divine heritage, that that was all I needed. And in hindsight, if you're interested, you can always look back and say, what was that ruckus all about? And for me, I can see it was just so clear. It was the train of my life changing tracks. But in the moment, since my inner senses were not that developed, and since I was, you know, that very uncertain about myself, totally confused, it was better not to try to figure it out. In hindsight, I can see, oh, everything was okay. But had I tried to figure it out, Alan, I would have come up with so many conclusions that I was an idiot, I was a moron, I was selfish, I was stupid, I was, you know, don't have enough belief in my own self, invisible, limiting, self-sabotaging beliefs were all around me. I would have drawn conclusions
that so many people do. I mean, that what you're
me from
relating is what so many people do in a situation like yours.
That.
How did you not do that?
How do you? Well, you. This is the virtue, if you will, or the benefit of asking the hard questions that I asked long ago in my teens and late teens. You know, who the heck are we? Because those hard questions have answers, and it is our greatest responsibility to not only ask them, but to seek out what those answers are. And nothing will empower anyone more. Nothing. Than knowing the truth of who we really are, how we got here, and why. Whereas the converse is equally true. Nothing will ever be as debilitating to anyone on the human adventure of life than not knowing the truth. Because when you don't know the truth, you give your power away, you have no confidence and zero traction. You know, God decides, maybe it's visualization, but what about karma and ancient spiritual contracts and, you know, there, right out the window is all your power because, you know, you're willy-nilly kind of wishy-washy and not giving yourself the reins, and that's what we have to have. And the answers are benign. I'm not trying to start a religion. They've been spoken about by philosophers since we got here. You know that we are, as I said, God particles. We are of the divine, by the divine, for the divine. Why? I don't really know, except to say, because we could, because the divine thought it was fun. And while we can look at pockets of the world and see great pain and suffering, these are exceptions. They're hideous exceptions. They're ugly exceptions. But of the 7 billion people alive, most people want to keep their life. That's how awesome life is.
How did you know what to do?
It's bountiful.
How did you know what steps to take?
Dreams do come true.
How did you know what to do? How did you know what steps to take?
Well, having kind of immersed myself in this thinking for as long as I did, it becomes pretty clear that anything will suffice given the leniency and the latitude afforded by divine intelligence. I don't generally call it God because that's got such baggage for people, but if you have a dream, anybody has a dream, like abundance or health or recovery or healing or relationships, and you hold on to that vision, get passionately, emotionally excited about it, you know, with vision boards or mantras, which are totally optional, but you know, people who have dreams come true are people who were able, for one way or another, to continue focusing on that end result. So it doesn't matter what you come up with, what gimmicky things, visualization, vision boards, but you keep on holding on to that dream, and then you just do stuff, you do anything about it. And perhaps my first orientation or exposure to this was when I played competitive junior tennis for 6 years. It was all about creative visualization. And I could feel the difference if I had stuck with my creative visualization routines versus not. I mean, I just played like a different person. And it's no wonder that every sport talks about this. It's no wonder that positive thinking is indoctrinated into the minds of all civilizations, all cultures, the world over. I mean, this stuff is echoed everywhere. I was raised a Catholic. You know, believe and ye shall receive. And there's a whole litany of other fabulous, empowering quotes that are in that holy book, the Bible, as well as undoubtedly other holy books of which I know very little. So how did I know? It was like life experience. It's kind of old wives' tales. Some call it wishful thinking or a way of looking at life. That's the mistake. It is how life works. It is absolute. We live in a benign, adoring universe that we are one with, that we are part of. And when we peel away the kind of the gray areas of the kinda, sorta, maybe, must be nice, and we live in these truths, and we demonstrate with our actions that presuppose we will arrive, and we stick with it, even though it always feels like our baby steps are futile. They always feel insufficient, even embarrassing, if you're coming from a seeming train wreck. But you take them anyway, and then always it seems like from day to day, nothing's happening. Today looks like yesterday. But it's the person who keeps on taking those steps, who doesn't quit when everyone else quits, that all of a sudden tipping points are reached, and they arrive. And you can see this kind of sequence play itself out in any hero or heroine that anyone could think of right now, from Oprah Winfrey to, just name him. They had a vision. Donald Trump, they had the audacity, whether it was through brilliance or arrogance, to say, that could be me. I'm going to do that. It doesn't matter why you believe it, so long as you believe it. And we're all entitled to believe whatever it is we want. This is why I believe we're here, to move in the direction of our dreams, to discover our power, to see the glory, to be of service, to fall in love. It's all so benign and friendly. All of a sudden, it's like, aha, of course. Of course we're not being judged. Of course we're not here to be sentenced. We're eternal beings. And of course it's more than chance. If life was just chance, that we're just like space dust that collided and somehow evolved, we would have been first of all, how do you get consciousness in space dust? How do you get consciousness in rocks? You can't. That's like a no-starter. But even if you could and it was pure chance, something's going to snuff it out, in two heartbeats before you get to a place of cell phones and Skylabs and the bountiful productivity that we experience as human beings right now. So the evidence stares us in the face everywhere, every day of life.
We're talking
to
Mike Dooley. I want to go back to that dialogue you had with, what's going to happen to my life? How did I get? What went wrong? What if I don't get a job? What if my money runs out? Something must have enabled you to get beyond that internal script to the more positive stuff and the belief. As you said, you've got to believe it before you see it. How did you get from that dialogue to believing otherwise?
Yeah, Alan, I was so truly negative then. And more than negative, I was fearful. And we all know fear is not an empowering state. But by that time, I was steeped enough and grounded enough in these truths that I'm now teaching for a career as my bliss and that I'm sharing with you, that it didn't make sense to me that my life fell apart. It did make sense to me that I am this gladiator of love and joy who's here by choice, whose thoughts become things. And I was so terrified of my life coming further undone, that fear kicked me into high gear, and I went to trade shows. I circulated my accountant's resume. I learned internet marketing. I was just not going to go down without a fight because it was too embarrassing. It'd be too painful. It'd be too humiliating. And I can't explain it. I had a sense that I'd be able to make progress and be happy again. And I think we are all innately born with that sense.
Is
and
that,
it's in all of us. I mean, people have been through far more harrowing, traumatic, terrifying times than me. I mean, I was alone. I didn't have any mouths to feed at that point. I wasn't in the bad spot compared to other people, yet they came through. It's in our nature. And something that it greases the wheels for all of my students and readers right now is a revelation I've had, evidenced by my life, evidenced by my comeback and the comeback of everyone, is given who we are, as I've outlined, the eyes and the ears of the divine come alive, God particles, if you will, we are inclined to succeed. We're not here with a 50-50. We've blown the lid off of survival of the fittest long ago. We are inclined to succeed, and therefore, it's as if our positive thoughts are at least 10,000 times, and I'm sure that's an understatement, more powerful than our negative thoughts, which is why even when I was, you know, so fearful 15 years ago that my life was, you know, the best of my life was over, that I might not ever figure it out, I still did what I could with what I had from where I was. I visualized. I went to trade shows. I circulated my resume. I learned internet marketing. I did what I could, which seemed paltry, which seemed insufficient, but I kept on doing it while having big dreams, which seemed ridiculous given where my life was and the confusion and the funk that I was in. Yet that, as has been borne out, was enough. And it's always enough. And the first question I get from audience members during Q&A, but Mike, what about my negative baggage, my subconscious thoughts, the stuff that my parents gave me about not being worthy that I'm not even able to put my finger on, you know? Or they say, Mike, I could never be as positive as you. It's like, oh, get out of here. I'm not that positive. It's not about being so positive. It's about continuing to show up. It's about continuing to say, you know, I can't see it, but I know the world is fair, that it's beautiful, that I'm powerful, and I'm going to start moving. I'm going to keep moving in the direction of my dreams. And so you don't need to worry about, oh, yeah, I had a negative thought. You don't need to worry about having a negative week, so long as you do your best with what you've got from where you are, so long as you have some kind of feeble dream. Let it just be to serve somebody. Let it just be to pay for the rent or to get a car or bus money. And then as you're consistently performing there, then raise the bar a little. Raise the bar a little. Everyone who has a dream of any kind and who stays in motion will astound themselves if they haven't already. And then when you can kind of get out of the way of all this old garbage that we've been taught about being tested, judged, and sentenced, which just gives our power away and ruins our confidence, you become even more powerful, and you become even more loving, and you become even of greater service to humanity. You know, a la Richard Branson or Oprah Winfrey, people who did what they wanted to do, a la Mother Teresa, who did what she wanted to do, and all of our lives are better by her good deeds and the ideals she showed us all to pursue. So it's like all win, it's all love, it's all good when you get to these simple truths just through sensing them out, and then you start applying them and living them.
We're talking to Mike Dooley, best-selling author, motivational speaker. You said something a little while ago that I wanted to get back to, which is a fascinating concept, that the universe is forgiving. You can make a few mistakes. Maybe you don't phrase it the right way. Maybe your mindset isn't. Maybe your mantras or your creative visualization isn't working exactly the way it should. But the universe will kind of step in, right, and help you out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look at all the people who succeed without creative visualization, even though our thoughts become things. It's because there's this latitude, and it's our nature to succeed. I once wrote a note from the universe, because a lot of people ask about creative visualization, and they worry if they're doing it right. And it said something to the effect of, if you're even attempting on a daily basis, take the weekends off if you want, to visualize, you're doing it right. You're totally doing it right, and it's going to pay big dividends for you. There's this latitude given our innate inclination to succeed. Put another way, we have default settings. People now know what that means, you know, with computers and the internet, of thriving, of abundance, money, health, clarity, friends, laughter. That's our normal state. We've been told that for the most part about health, and therefore we have it without even thinking about it. We haven't been told that about money. We haven't been told that about success. Oh, no, only the early bird gets the worm. Oh, only opportunity only knocks once. We've been told that it's really hard. And as I said earlier, whatever you believe, whether it's because you're a genius or you're arrogant or ignorant, if you believe it, you shall see it, because your beliefs stimulate your thoughts, and your thoughts will then become the things and events of your lives. Or your beliefs will shut your wandering mind down and tell you to stop dreaming, and so you stop dreaming, and then there's nothing to become the things and events of your lives. But there is that latitude It's just like so beautiful and simple. Once the world sees it, and they're waking up, the world is waking up now. When everyone kind of marches to this this view of beauty, of permissiveness, of allowance, of tolerance, of everyone's doing their best, there will be transformation, the likes that we cannot now imagine, and truly heaven on earth.
You took what you had been writing on T-shirts, basically. You created notes from the universe. You've got, 700,000? Numbers probably increased since I read about it. People who get your stuff every single day, 185 countries. And it just metastasized. How did this come about? You developed this incredible mailing list of people who, first thing in the morning, wait to read your notes from the universe every day.
You know, it was at that seeming train wreck time that I wanted to receive something like this, because I knew my thoughts were fear-based. I knew that I was worrying a lot about the future. I knew that that was negative. I wasn't as well-versed nor as confident then as I am now, but still, I knew I needed to kind of, you know, step it up and try to be a little more positive. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be great to sporadically, at unpredictable times in the day, you know, have a little reminder pop up on my display monitor that says, you know, you're awesome, you're being pushed on to greatness, you're inclined to succeed, go for it, just take that little baby step, there's lots of latitude and leeway. I wanted to get stuff like that, and nobody was doing anything like that. So I started sending out just emails from Mike to a minuscule database of people who signed our T-shirt, our T-shirt store's guest books, and some of them started putting down email addresses when emails came out. I mean, the very first mass mailing was to 36 people, and it was for a T-shirt deal of the week. But by the time we liquidated the T-shirt company, I had a couple thousand email addresses, and I didn't want to stop emailing people. It was just, like, so cool to hit send, and 1,000 people around the world virtually for free would get correspondence from us, from me. So I started sending out this motivation that I wanted to receive that wasn't being offered. And that evolved into, within a year, a daily note from the universe. The universe, the divine, is talking lovingly and supportively to you with your name in the email, and sometimes a reference to your profile answers as to what you dream of doing or being. And from that point, it took off, and as you said, there's over 700,000 people who get those emails now. Millions have come and gone. Happily, there's always more people every day who sign up than who sign off, and majorities, you know, don't go anywhere. So it's just been through word of mouth, and it's made possible all that I do. I'm not really that well known, except for the notes, and I tell people I'm coming to town, and they show up to my events. I tell people I have a new book, and the subscribers go buy the new book. So it's been an amazing thing, and it exemplifies what I say in my teachings, you know, as many say. You know, don't worry about how your dream will come true. Chances are great, you'll never guess. And even if you think you know how your dream's going to come true, let it go. Which doesn't exclude any of your hopes, but it leaves the door open for even better. You know, and I could never have imagined that sending out a free email for 15 years would turn into billions of emails, if you added them all up, nor New York Times bestsellers, world tours, and the life of my wildest dreams.
But do you have any unfulfilled dreams at this point?
Not really. You know, we all have things we want that we haven't yet gotten, and things to do that we haven't yet done. But as soon as we get them and do them, they're replaced by others, and I think that is the hallmark of the divine alive and well within us. It means we're never going to, you know, stagnate and not grow and evolve. So for me, though, it would be more along the lines of more of the same, bigger, better. I'd like to write a book that resonates, you know, way beyond my mailing list, and that thrills and excites and enlightens people the world over, maybe fictional, maybe nonfiction. I'd like to, my new thing is I want to go more within. I've never really meditated in a conventional way. And again, there's such leniency. You don't have to meditate or visualize, and you're still going to succeed, you know, when you know these simple truths. But yet, there is an inner world that I'd like to explore, and so I'm kind of excited about that. But, you know, yeah, as far as cars or homes or whatever, yeah, you know, yeah, no, those
do we,
are not.
Do you know all the basic laws of the universe? Could you is there any quick way to articulate, here are the main laws of the universe that works for everybody?
Wow, that brings us to a really interesting personal pursuit of, like, what are the pillars of reality? What are the laws, as you just called them? And in my book, Infinite Possibilities, and then echoed in subsequent books, I call these pillars of reality the truths of being. And Alan, I could only come up with five, like, general. Number one is, everything is of God, by God, pure God. It's all God, period. Number two, by the same token, by the same measure, we're all one. Number three, thoughts become things. Our thoughts, individually and collectively, become our physical experience. Number four, it's all good, which is simply to say it's all fair. If you don't see the order, there's order, kind of thing. And right now, number five escapes me. But I couldn't come up with any others. I mean, there's absolute total leeway in what we can think and therefore do, be, and achieve. But as far as a law, I am not aware of them. I don't believe that karma is an absolute law. I don't believe there's a phenomenon of karma, which is very real, and we all see what goes around comes around. But it can be trumped by our thoughts and our focus. There's nothing other than thoughts becoming things when it comes to movable parts in the scheme of things. And so what I tell all audiences is, you know, thoughts become things, choose the good ones, but don't worry if you have a few bad ones, because you're inclined to succeed and your positive thoughts are much more powerful than your negative ones. And if you can't stop that runaway train of fear, you can simultaneously start a happier one running and just do that to the best of your ability. It'll be enough. And of course, so that there can be these coincidences and seeming serendipities that transform our lives, we need to meet them by showing up physically in the world every single day, moving in the general direction of our dreams. And that's it. There's nothing to do on Fridays that you shouldn't do on Sundays, that's more important to do on a Wednesday, or that there's no one to pay alms to, there's no one to ask for forgiveness of. Now, of course, if we hurt people, and we certainly do, and we're aware of it, we need to atone for that. But for as far as the divine goes, no, that there's a bunch of stuff there that has clouded our vision and made men enemies of men, and not really advanced the civilization very much, in spite of its perhaps beautiful origins. I'm speaking of conventional religion. But it's so simple. It's just so loving. It's so easy. And that's what we've missed for too many millennia so far.
And if people go to GUT.com, they can find out more about you, your lectures, where you're speaking, your books, and get some of your philosophy. If they want to sit and watch and see more of you, your videos are there as well. And it's a delight to talk to you, Mike. I really appreciate the opportunity to flesh this out a bit.
Well, thank you, Alan. I've enjoyed every minute. I'm always available to you.
Thank you so much. This is Heal Planet. I'm Alan Combs, and thank you very much for listening.